Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. My name is Kit Alexander and I've been handed the responsibility and honour of hosting duties this week as our usual man, Ollie, is jetting his way back to Australia. As usual, I'm joined by our panel of experts as we look ahead to the Challenge Tour Grand Final and the Worldwide Technologies Championship on the PGA Tour. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. We've got two cracking guests this week, Matt Cooper, freelance golf writer and tipster, and Niall Lyons, golf writer and odds checker, golf tipster. Now before I hand over to them, we'll just have a little look at what happened in Qatar last week. Commercial Bank Qatar Masters was the final regular event of the DP World Tour season. So loads going on, loads to play for. Top 116 to retain their cards. And of course, Sami Valimaki coming through and winning it. In the end, there was only one player who actually jumped into the top 116. And that was Scott Jamieson, and he had a decent little run at the tournament as well. Matt, hello. What did you make of what was quite an exciting week in Qatar?
Yeah. It's that sort of odd business this time of year. Some people think, you know, you're getting towards the end of the year, everything's, you know, the big stars tend to stay away. In actual fact, it's a strange thing. The last events of the regular tour season and the one we're going to be discussing later on, the Challenge Tour Grand Final, they're both very similar in many ways. And the reason is that there is more than one winner in those weeks. And it's very strange. Normally, golf is very, very peculiar. You've got multi-narratives, but ultimately only one person wins. In these weeks, very strange things happen, you know. And it means that the whole leaderboard, not just the first page, is really, really important. And as you say, Scott Jamieson had a fantastic final round to secure his playing rights last week. But then you see the agony for other folk. Danny Van Tonder just failed to get his playing rights. And Alex Levy, perhaps his story was not quite as dramatic as it initially seemed with some of the footage, but it was in effect. He desperately needed to make the cut and then have a very good weekend. He lipped out for a hole in one in his 35th hole and then lipped out for a birdie putt on his 36th hole. Missed the cut by two ultimately, but there was some very vivid footage on DP World Tour's social media, really worth looking at, because you can see that the impact is not just seen through him and the devastation he's feeling, but the other caddies that were on that green, they really, really tell the story. It was horrible stuff for Alex. I think he'll bounce back. He's a fantastic character, very bubbly, and he's been coming back from injury this year, so I don't think he'll be down for very long. But that's just a classic case last week of so many different stories. And for those of us who watch, I always think these weeks, they're fantastic, but they sort of appeal to the voyeur in us all, I think. It's there's something a bit sort of ghoulish about looking and watching somebody who's playing for his, you know, his livelihood for the next 12 months. And it appeals to us in a slightly different way to the normal run-of-the-mill week.
No. Did you have any luck with the tips last week?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I like the way Matt gets in the word ghoulish on Halloween. You know, it's actually Halloween today, actually, isn't it? I had Robert McIntyre, who it kind of struck me that he maybe just was getting too tired towards the end of the week. You know, it's been a busy period for him, obviously leading in, trying to hang on to that third place, heading into the Ryder Cup, and then obviously he went to Dunhill after that and then Spain. It has been a tough period, and you know, after a couple of rounds, I was quite hopeful that he was going to land a victory there, but it just wasn't to be. And I was kind of disappointed to miss out in Valimaki again. I was one of the ones who sat up in the early hours of the morning and watched the Vic Open whenever the wind was blowing, you know, a total gale that final day on the Sunday where Minwoo Lee won. And I had it in my head to, you know, always keep Valimaki in mind whenever you're at a course where, you know, wind often plays its part. And of course, he goes and wins the Oman Open the next time out. And I didn't back him at silly prices, of course, by the coast again. And then, you know, you go to Qatar where, you're always looking at links form, previous links form, guys who have played well in the wind. And, you know, Valimaki didn't register with me again. So, yeah, I was quite annoyed to miss out on a second victory.
Yeah, it was an excellent performance from the Finn, taking down Jorge Campillo at the first sudden death playoff hole. Matt, were you sniffing in and around the leaderboard with any of your picks?
Kind of. Matt Wallace was my number one pick last week on the show, and you know he had a poor start. His front nine on Thursday was a bit sticky, and he powered back in great style over the next 27 holes. But I think the effort of getting back into something kind of leads to a bit of a flat spot. And yeah, he didn't kick on at the weekend. Like Niall, I was left kicking myself a little bit because the two things I said last week when it came to picks for Doha were good form at the Earth Course at Jumeirah and good links wind form, and Valimaki has both of those. He'd even, you know, fifth in the DP World Tour Championship, and he just finished sixth at the Dunhill Links. So the traffic lights were saying green for me, and I just sort of didn't bother to get into first gear.
Yeah, it was a big win for Valimaki as well, because that's got him bang inside those top 10, not otherwise exempt on the Race to Dubai now, who will pick up a PGA Tour card at the end of the season. And very early in the week, Valimaki was talking about how big that was on his radar. And really, he's all but guaranteed, you would think, his procession now onto the PGA Tour. And that's going to be interesting. We're going to see a few players make that step at the end of this year going into next year who, you know, maybe even 2 or 3 months ago, or certainly at the start of the season, you wouldn't have imagined them having a PGA Tour card maybe quite this quickly. But Sami Valimaki is going to be one of them. So that's going to be really, really interesting. Now let's switch our attention to this week. And it's a busy show. Two events. First up, though, we've got the Rolex Challenge Tour Grand Final, supported by the R&A at Golf Club Alcanada in Mallorca. And it's another event where there is lots and lots of storylines going on. 45 players in the field this week in Northern Mallorca. It's actually the top 46 from the rankings, because Alex Fitzpatrick, who's in the top 10 of the Challenge Tour's Road to Mallorca, has booked his ticket for the DP World Tour next season by finishing really well on their order of merit. So the top 46 get into the field. Martin Kuvra, the lucky 46th man to make it 45 with Alex not teeing it up. And the top 20 at the end of this week on the Road to Mallorca will be playing DP World Tour golf in just a very few weeks. And there's plenty of pedigree. It's always an interesting mix, I find, when you get to the Challenge Tour Grand Final. The narrative is often that it's the young guns coming through, but there's plenty of pedigree and winners on the DP World Tour who've had to drop back to rebuild their careers. The likes of Andrea Pavan, Matteo Manassero, Brandon Stone. Got some Francesco Laporta, Julian Suri, Ricardo Gouveia, who've all got experience at the higher level as well. It's a cracking course. Absolutely beautiful, as I said, there in the north of the island. It's quite undulating. Some stunning views out over the sea. And a real good test for the players, especially as the wind gets up, which it is very much forecast to do this week. It could be blowing an absolute gale for the first 3 days if forecasts right now are to be believed. Matt, of course, we normally focus on the DP World Tour here, but no event this week, so we do focus our attention on the Challenge Tour Grand Final. And I think we're guaranteed drama. I know you've had your focus on these events and been to one or two of them before. Just give us an insight into what the vibe's like and how much is actually on the line for these players.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. I've been to three of the different venues. San Domenico in Italy. I went out to Festival City in Dubai and Al Muj in Oman. Three different venues, three different golf courses. Oddly, like Alcanada this week, all of them were close to the sea, a bit breezy. So that test has always maintained. And what has also always maintained is the fact that it's kind of like it's. There's both a great goal there, and also there's a slight sort of end of term final day about it, and that tends to come it creep in as the week goes on, and I think it kind of explains one of the big factors of this, which is that in the last 12 editions of this, 11 of the winners were in 12th or better on the rankings, and had more or less secured their playing rights for the following year on the DP World Tour, and I think the reason why those guys have won is because they don't have that added pressure of trying to get into what was the top 15 and is now the top 20. Interestingly, before that, the eight before that, the last 12, seven of the eight winners were outside the top 12. So there's been like a real sort of shift. And I think part of that is it's the growing strength of the Challenge Tour, which has always been a very keen producer of high quality performers. You know, Thomas Bjorn, Henrik Stenson came from the Challenge Tour. In fact, Henrik Stenson won this event when it was held in Cuba years ago. But I think now it's a very tough school, but there are always the possibilities that someone can come from way back in the field, have a great week, and get their playing rights on the main tour next year. Andrew Beef Johnson was a classic example in 2011 when I think he finished third behind Andre Pavan and Tommy Fleetwood. And that's another angle there. You see the fact that Tommy Fleetwood, this is where he found his way onto the main tour. And like you say, there are people who will be playing this week who are going to go on and have a great career. And then you also said there's also these great storylines where people have stepped backwards, and sometimes they're guys who have gone up and down quite frequently. And David Drysdale was a winner of this tournament once, and maybe this year that could be Stuart Manley, who's a guy who's in his 40s, approaching his mid-40s, been a bit of a bouncer up and down between the main tour and the second tier. He's had a really good year this year. He's actually quite a doughty character in the wind as well, so he might not be the stupidest thought for this week. But yeah, it's very much as the week goes on, if guys haven't got a sniff of winning, it does tend to become a bit end of term like. But for those who are in the top of the leaderboard, it becomes like a real high pressure situation. And I remember specifically Festival City a few years ago. The DP World Tour had a computer that was showing you live projections of where people were going to be in the rankings. And the drama was just absolutely outstanding. We were looking through the window, literally watching shots going into 18. And immediately, as soon as the score was put into the computer, somebody was 1 minute out of getting a card. Next minute, they were getting a card. The tension was absolutely fantastic. And that's why it's so great that you're there commentating this week. And we're going to get to see live coverage of this. Because as many people say, Q School would be great to see live on television. I think I mentioned earlier the voyeuristic nature of this sort of stuff. The one time I did go to Q School, I found it too voyeuristic, and actually at one point ended up hiding behind a tree because I was literally terrified that a player would see me, and which only made me think that I was actually probably going to distract them because the player is going to be looking at me going, why is that idiot hiding behind the tree? But it was the whole thing was just too sort of stressy and for my delicate composition. So, but I'm looking forward to watching it this week on television. And yeah, I think we're in for a really exciting week, I think.
Yeah, I think part of the attraction this week for punters especially is, as you mentioned, you know, obviously for punters, they don't usually get involved in the Challenge Tour and stick to the two main tours. And we're discussing this week, which is handy for it, you know. For anybody looking at starting point, as you just said, eight of the last nine winners have come from the top 10 in the rankings. You know, as part for, you know, a betting preview like that with guys who normally don't get involved with us, that's music to their ears. You know, if you can, you know, who knows what will happen at the end of the day. Any of the 45 could win, but if you can count 35 of those 45 out and start again, then, yeah, it's a huge... it's a huge part of the field cut out. And, you know, eight of the last nine coming from the top 10, the exception to that was 11th. So, you know, it's a big clue, and it's a good place to start this week. We'll get on to the picks in a minute. But as you say, I think it's just the freedom to play with, you know, their future secured for next year. Yes. Plays a huge part.
There's actually a couple of other trends that are worth bearing in mind. They're a little bit related to the fact of the rankings, but 11 of the 12 already had a win for the year. Now clearly there's a good chance that you know, you're going to be in the top 10, top 12 if you've had a win. But also 11 of the 12 actually had a top 7 finish in their previous three starts. But so, you know, you're looking for guys who are in a little bit of form. They've known what it's like to be at the top of the leaderboard during the year. So as Niall says, it's an event where you can narrow the field down in terms of trying to capture the winner pretty quickly. But it's also worth bearing in mind, it's not just Andrew Johnston. A few years ago, James Busby, he was way back. I think he might even have been 45th going into the week, and he had a great week and finished second. So if you look, you can look at the bigger prices and get a good each way value with them.
Niall, do you attribute much to experience this week, or does that kind of go out of the window a little bit on a week like this when there is so much in play and so much going on?
I think that almost the younger guys could have a bit more hunger than those guys who are older, but you've already mentioned how much the wind is going to blow this week, and it's going to play a huge factor, and that will play into the hands of guys with a bit more experience of those conditions throughout their career. So even one I looked to was Darren Fickard, for one. I remember back in 3 or 4 years ago, I think he got to the lead after 3 days in Qatar, you know, another place where the wind really blew, but it did really blow on that third day where he got into the lead. So, yeah, there's guys like that whose these conditions will definitely suit. I think a few of the more of the younger bucks will be, you know, slightly afraid of the conditions that they're going to face this week.
Yeah, oldest man in the field, Darren Fickard, at 48 years old. And it is going to require a bit of patience this week, I think. It is live on television. You're going to see full coverage of all four rounds. It was for the first time last year as well. I think it was brilliant to be able to bring everyone, as I was a part of the team last year and will be this time, bring everyone those stories. And the emotions that you see from players when they finish. I mean, the top 20 that qualified, three or four of them were actually in tears with their families around the scorer's hut, around 18 green afterwards. And I remember Matthias Gradecki finished well, and he thought he'd done enough to get in the top 20, and he's coming off the 18th green and it's high fives and hugs, and he had a lot of supporters there, the Polish player. He thought he'd done it. 20 minutes later, someone birdies 18 and suddenly he's out. I think it was like John Parry or Matt Baldwin off the top of my head. They knock it in tight on 18, make a birdie. They jump in ahead of him, and suddenly from really struggling through the final round, they make that one brilliant shot. As you said, Matt, you're seeing the shots going live, and it changes the future of two players. And for every player with ecstasy, there's one with agony, and we will see all of that unfold this week from Thursday onwards with full live coverage. Right, let's have a look at the top of the market. So Frédéric Lacroix, the Frenchman, is the favourite at 14-1. Francesco Laporta tucked in just behind that. You can get him 14-16s. Manuel Elvira, who's currently leading the Rota Mallorca rankings, he's at 16-1. It's a really tight bunch looking at this, actually. Manuel might have Nacho, his brother, out supporting him this week. It depends if he decides to go out to South Africa early or not. Nacho had a really good run on the DP World Tour last week. Andrea Pavan 16-1 as well. Julian Suri 16 or 18-1. Jesper Svensson 20-1. Brandon Stone 20 or 22-1. That looks pretty tempting. I think what we're seeing there from those odds is that it tells us that it is such a wide open event, and it's so hard to pick a favorite. And this season on the Challenge Tour in general, the top of the rankings are incredibly tight. Normally you get 1, 2, 3 players that separate themselves off and are the cream of the crop. That hasn't really happened this season. So it is as tight as I've ever seen it going into this final event of the season. Right, let's get on to the good stuff and the picks. Matt, who's your first selection?
Well, I think you made a good point about how tight it is at the top. And if we base a few things on what I was like saying about the importance of somebody who's won, somebody who's in the top 12, somebody who's in good form, I've been quite brutal for my first pick, and I've actually used those sort of sifts to sort of sort the wheat from the chaff, and that knocked out a few people who'd be slightly surprised. You know, knocked out Manuel Elvira, knocked out Casey Jarvis, the young South African who's been on fire for the first half of the season. And it led me ultimately to Jesper Svensson, the Swede. First of all, I quite like the fact that he's high up in the rankings. He's fourth. He can get 20-1, so he's sort of the right side of that number for making him a nice each way bet. He's also got experience of winning a race too. So he won the race to Himmerland on the Nordic Golf League in 2020. So he knows what it's like to come to the end of season event and peak for that. He was winning in Holland earlier this year. He's three times been second. And I quite like the fact that one of those second places was in Spain and he lost in a playoff. And then he's also been twice in his last four starts. And one of those he lost in a playoff as well. So he's been very, very close to winning a lot this year and very, very close to winning a lot in the last few weeks. So I'm slightly surprised that you can get him at 20-1, fourth in the rankings. Looks to me like he's got a great shot. And I think there's a couple at the top of the rankings and therefore at the top of the betting who are a little bit we can take them on a little bit. And in actual fact, Freddy Lacroix, a very good player, but he's not in the rankings at the moment. So he's got to make a push. I'm happy to take on a couple of those favourites with the Swedes, Svensson.
Now, who are you going for?
Yeah, I'm quite similar. My approach to my first bet, to Matt, there's just a few out of foot. Manuel Oliveira, you know, still has yet to get a win. You have to go back to 2017 for his last win as an amateur as well. You know, is he going to do it on the final stage here this week? It's questionable, even though he's had a great year. And then there's a couple of others towards the top here, you know, kind of woefully out of form, the Frenchman and Cousseau and Casey Jarvis and others. So, yeah, further on down the betting board, it makes sense to me. And I'm quite surprised you can get Ricardo Gouveia at 25-1. He's won twice on the Challenge Tour this week and one last time out as well at the Heineken Open. You know, he's Portuguese and he's got real good experience in the wind. Whenever we look to preview these events that, you know, where the wind blows, you always look to form at Dom Pedro and, you know, guys like Gouveia. You know, this is made for them. He's 7th and 8th in his last two visits to Spain on the Challenge Tour this year. And of course, as Matt said, he's got experience in winning a race too. You know, he won the 2015 edition of this event. He's not the most consistent performer all year, but at the end of the day, he has a couple of victories. And when the wind blows, he can really play well. So, yeah, I'm quite surprised. He fits the bill of all those trends that we were talking about. And even though I've got one more pick who's outside that top 12, simply because of the weather, I think. I'm quite happy to add the Portuguese at 25-1.
Seems to have a really funny knack for coming good at this stage in a Challenge Tour season, Ricardo Gouveia, Matt.
Yeah, it's very, like you say, it's a very nice knack to have. It might just be that he's the kind of guy who just needs the pressure to draw the best out of himself. I'll push on with my second now. There's been a bit of a theme of this Challenge Tour year, which is high success for the Italians, which might have been influenced by the Ryder Cup being in Italy, who knows, but Matteo Manassero, Lorenzo Scalise, and Francesco Laporta, and somebody else who's completely evaded my brain at the moment. Who am I missing, guys? Pavan, of course, Andrea Pavan. They've done really well. But a sneaky little success story this year is Shropshire Golf. Now, Will Enifer.
I wondered how you were getting to this pick from the Italians.
This is very complex. And in actual fact, I am in Shropshire right now. I am from Shropshire. And Will Enifer learned to play golf on the same golf course as me, Reeking Golf Club. And actually, Will Enifer has played through me and my group once. And my friend at the time said, that lad's supposed to be quite good at golf. And he's proving it this year. And he's not the only Shropshire guy in with a chance of winning a card this year. Will's 12th at the moment, so he's in that kind of sweet spot. There's also Ollie Farr, who's from South Shropshire, and he's just outside the top 20, as is Ashley Chesters, who is also just outside the top 20. And it shows you just what a tough school this is. Both Farr and Chesters have finished second twice this year, and they're still outside that top 20. So you've got to play really well to get your card. Ashley Chesters, by the way, was once the unwitting victim of one of the great transcription errors at the Open. He was at the time, it's 2015, he was an amateur. He's a very diffident chap, Ashley, and he got interviewed and there was a lot of buzz around the transcription area as people read his comments. And it had been transcribed that he drove a Porsche. And nobody could quite get their heads around the fact that this diffident young amateur was driving a Porsche. And it actually ended up being tweeted by loads of people and it got in the Sun diary. And the reason is that he actually, I have sort of mutual friends and I messaged them and said, Ashley doesn't drive a Porsche, does he? No, he drives a Peugeot. but they'd got it wrong. Somebody had misheard. And when I read the quote out to you, you will understand why this caused quite a fuss and made a very diffident chap look like a big time Charlie. So his line was, "I do have a car, yeah, a Porsche 308. I quite like it. I'm not that big into cars, to be honest. As long as it gets me from A to B, that's fine." And this was just spectacular. I mean, like, this,
surely someone should have known there's not a Porsche 308.
This is what I always remember. It tells the world that the Golf Writers are not used to sort of going to a Porsche dealership.
Dealerships. I don't know. I mean, which one are they more unfamiliar?
Yes. Yeah. But it was very funny. But poor Ashley felt very silly about this because it did cause a bit of a blow up on it. And yeah, he did look like a bit of a big time Charlie. But it's not Ashley, it's Will who I'm interested in. And it's because of a little sneaky bit of form on the course that Will has. So he's with the Trinifold Management Group, and they got some invites on the Challenge Tour this year. Now, Will started this year expecting to play on the third tier Clutch Tour, but his management group have a big stable, and quite interestingly, rather than just hand these invites out, they had a competition at the start of the year, and it was at Alcanada, and the winners there that week would get six invites on the Challenge Tour this year. Will won that tournament at Alcanada, shooting 12 under for the week, and off the back of that, he was so excited he went and won on the Clutch Tour the week after. And the week after that, he finished third on the Challenge Tour on his first invite, and that got the ball rolling. And he stayed on the Challenge Tour all year. He's finished second a couple of times since then, and he's back where basically his year started. And so he's got really, really good vibes this week. He's had quite a lot of success with his girlfriend, who's an LET golfer, Anna Dawson, when she's been on the bag. But I think his coach is going to be on the bag this week. But I like the fact that he's had that good run. And also he knows that when he won here, it did kickstart. He both won a week later on the third tier, and also then had that brilliant effort that started his run. And he's pretty much assured of getting to the main tour next year. So he can play with that little bit of freedom. I think you can get 33-1 on him. It's not massive odds, but I think those good vibes give him a really good chance this week.
I like him in the wind as well. I remember seeing him a lot on the Euro Pro Tour. He had 2 or 3 years there when he first turned professional, and his win actually came at Montrose. So right up in Northern Scotland, Lynx course, windy, good wind player. And also has a handy little habit of when he gets going, he can go really, really low, a real momentum player. So I think that's an absolutely fantastic pick, especially with that added layer of the weather forecast we're expecting this week. Now, who's your second?
Yeah, my second's Tom Lewis. He's outside the top 11 or 12 that we were talking about earlier on, but simply because of the weather, I think I'm going out of that and choosing someone who's well proven in these conditions. I mentioned Portugal earlier on, of course, 2011 and 2018 champion around Dom Pedro, so that's a real great feather in his cap here heading this week. He also has an 11th place in the Open Championship of Portrush back in 2019. A couple of those days were quite tricky there as well. And I'm right in saying he led the Open Championship after 1 year as well. Does that
he
mean,
did, yeah.
Was it Turnberry, was it?
Sandwich in 2011.
Sandwich?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he's got plenty of good efforts, in trigger conditions. And, of course, back in 2019, he won the Corn Ferry equivalent of this year, winning the Corn Ferry Tour Championship back in 2019, beating Scotty Scheffler by 9 shots that week. So if we've got someone with a handicap of 9 shots over Scotty Scheffler, I'm taking a 28-1 every week.
I think that's a really good call going on that memory. I'd kind of forgotten just how that had happened for Tom. I think it'd be a really good story if that happened as well, because Tom had that great little run of form that started with a win on the Challenge Tour. The excitement of doing that, he went and won the Portugal Masters again, got himself in great form, managed to vault himself up on the PGA Tour, and then got stuck where he was playing a bit of PGA Tour, a bit of European Tour. And I always tend to think that when it often happens, actually, when people have got a foot on the Challenge Tour and a foot on the main tour in Europe, and it almost feels to me like they're like a guy who's got one foot on a dinghy and one foot on the shore, and the dinghy sort of swings into the middle of the thing and they just end up splashing into the water. And it's very difficult to keep your focus on two different spots. And he's and Tom's ended up slipping backwards when he got to such great heights. I mean, he almost won a WGC event in the middle of that run. So it'd be a great story if he manages to round it off by winning another end of season event.
Yeah, you mentioned having one foot in either tour. It's why a good shout out for Alex Fitzpatrick as well, who's kind of done that this year, but has done enough to earn his card in both rankings lists. So hence why it is that going down to the top 46 this week, and he isn't teeing it up. And Wilco Nienaber, a guy for the last couple of years, he's come on with, you know, great fanfare, tried to play both DP World Tour and a fair few invites and getting into the South African events, and of course the Challenge Tour as well, and hasn't got a full DP World Tour by either route by doing that the last 2 years. And you think at some point maybe you just do focus on the short term on the Challenge Tour for the greater mid and long term advantage. Yeah. Any other guys who were in and around your thinking this week?
I was sort of interested. I'm just having a little quick grab here. Andrea Pavan interested me. I would be slightly worried about the if it gets really, really blowy, but he's another guy who's got experience of winning this. Like I said, he went head-to-head with Tommy Fleetwood in 2011 and won it. He's such an interesting character. I remember chatting to him at the Turkish Open a few years ago, and he sort of I asked him why he'd come so good, because he won a couple of times on the main tour. And he said basically he stopped trying to fight the fact that he wanted to hit the ball as far as everybody else, and he just accepted that his approach work was what made him a good golfer, and just didn't worry about what he tried to put it in the fairway and use his iron work, and it had worked for a couple of years. Something's gone wrong since, and it's great to see him fighting back. I mean, I think lots of punters have noticed just how much he fell off a cliff. And there was a lot of excitement last year when he started appearing on leaderboards again, just because it's a nice story. And he's built himself back up from this second tier. I think it's the third time he'll have graduated in this manner. So that says a lot about his character. And I think also I think lots of us also would love to see Matteo Manassero do well. But I'm not entirely convinced about his ability in really blowy wind, but he's played quite well, and he's an amateur champion. So he's won on a Lynx course. But also Francesco Laporta, yet another person who's won this end of season event. And I think he probably does like the wind a little bit more than that other pair of Italians.
Didn't he win the big green egg as well, Laporta? I think it was he won that at 7 under par. So I think it was quite tough that week as well. So you know, that would kind of suit. There's only one other that I would that come into my reckoning this week, and I've already mentioned him, Darren Fickard. I think the wind is really good. It really does look horrific for the first couple of days, and he strikes me as someone who's obviously got plenty of experience in the bank, but he's got quite a compact swing, and a small center of gravity. It almost reminds me of Ian Woosnam or something, in the wind, someone who can, really keep his balance, as opposed to many of these young bucks who've got long, wide, fast swings, just across the week. That could suit someone like Fickard.
I hadn't considered that until we were chatting, and I'm all over that. I think Fickard's a great pick.
Yeah, also, I'm keeping an eye on Stephen Brown this week as well. Finished third in the Hainan Open, the previous event, to jump 29 spots in the Road to Mallorca up to 41st to actually get into the field this week. A previous winner in Portugal on the DP World Tour as well. A lot of Lynx experience for him as well. Those two, if he could do enough this week to get his card and in the top 20, that would be quite a story also. Guys, brilliant insights into one of the most dramatic events of the year. Let's take a break, and it's time for a quick game of Who Am I? Okay, so you know the rules. It's a player from the Rolex Challenge Tour Grand Final, and I'll give you 5 clues, each getting progressively easier. And the first one to guess the player right wins. It's as simple as that. So clue number 1. I won the NCAA Division II National Championship with West Florida in 2001. Matt's got his hand up. Who are you
I'm going to guess with one of the old boys, and I'm going to go. I don't think this guy went to the States, but I'm going to go, and I think he's too old for this. Stuart Manley.
Absolutely spot on to zone in on the older guys. Obviously, 2001 at college, but yeah, you're absolutely spot on. It's Stuart Manley. The rest of the clues. Number two, I made a hole in one at the 2013 World Cup of Golf in Melbourne, and followed that with an 11 at the next hole.
Wow.
Clue three, my one and only major appearance was in the 2017 Open Championship. Clue four I found interesting when I dug this one up. I was a promising footballer in my youth, having trials at Manchester United, Crystal Palace and Luton Town.
I actually knew this. I did know this. And I half thought to myself, if he was that good at football, would he be fannying around going to the States to play golf?
That's very true. It is the classic Gordon Ramsay had trials for Rangers when he was nowhere near it syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then the fifth clue, I have an unusual technique to line up the putts, reminiscent of a spider. Now, I automatically thought Camilo Villegas when.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's Stuart Manley, and what an effort. I think for probably only the second time in history, because I think I might have done it with Richard Mansell, we've had a correct guess on the first clue. So hats off. Matt Cooper, sensational. Okay, now our attention will switch across the pond to the PGA Tour, the Worldwide Technologies Championship in Mexico. So the PGA Tour heading south of the border over there, formerly the Mayakoba Golf Classic, and it's heading down to Los Cabos, right at the bottom of the Baja California Peninsula. Absolutely stunning area, and El Cardenal Golf Course is an absolute stunner as well. Designed by Tiger Woods, the first time a PGA Tour event is going to a Tiger Woods-designed golf course. Opened in 2014. Very wide fairways, averaging 60 yards in width. Platinum, paspalum, grass. And I think it's going to be a very, very interesting week. I'll go to you, Niall, for the first time on this one. What do you know about the course out there?
Yeah, it's certainly an intriguing one. I quite like Mayakoba. I'm not too pleased about it being off the schedule now, but Mayakoba used to really lend itself to a bat as well. You know, your Graham McDowell types, and you know, it really was a week where you could sift down the field quite easily. This is a fair bit different, as you say. Fairway average width fairway 60 yards. That, you know, that's kind of like St Andrews.
We could hit that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even Matt, who holds up Challenge Tour golfers on his course, would say, you know, yeah, the fairways are as wide as a Clyde, but there's these things called arroyos. Do you think I've got that right?
Arroyos. Yeah, you've got to be a bit as well, I think. Yeah,
yeah, they're like native areas, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot about them this week. There's no rough, so if you miss a fairway, one of those wide fairways, you'll end up in these kind of native areas, which I don't know whether they'll prove too significant or not. You know, they shouldn't be missing these fairways after all. But yeah, it's as you mentioned there, Kittis Paspalum grass, so it's kind of similar to the Greg Norman designed Vedanta course that has held the Mexican Open the last couple of years. So a nod to form there. Not only is it good location wise, but it's quite similar. That course has been dominated by the Bombers this last couple of years too, which I think will probably happen this week in this Tiger Woods course as well. There's a lot of undulation changes from tee to green, uphill and downhill. Kind of reminds me of Kapalua in many ways, that holds the Century Tournament of Champions in January time. So yeah, there are the two courses that I would look to, Kapalua and Vedanta, over the last couple of years.
Matt, interesting mix of players in the field, with it being the fifth of seven fall series events. So getting towards last chance saloon for players to try and get in the top 1, 2, 5 and keep their playing privileges for next season as well.
Yeah, and I, from what I've seen of the course, and I'm gonna admit it's not a lot, but I've been through the course guide on the website, and first of all, Tiger says that he likes to give people options, so that it might be wide, but there are optimum lines to take, and you can play it conservatively. But it does seem to me like there's a big advantage there if somebody hits the ball long and executes well, because it's not just that they're going to cut dog legs or avoid bunkers that other guys are steering clear of. It's that there are inbuilt sort of shoots, so that if you actually do take that aggressive line, you're landing on downhill bits of fairway, and you're going to get an extra 50 yards. So it's like
Kapalua in that way too,
yes.
Matt, isn't it?
Well, when you mentioned Kapalua, I thought to myself, yeah, that kind of exaggerates that effect. So I think if people really can go for it and they have to execute well, of course, then yeah, there's a real advantage to aggressive drivers of the ball. And I think the man who's the favourite in the market, he's rather good from the tee and executes rather well.
Yeah, just looking at the top of that market, something we're getting increasingly used to seeing is a Mr. Ludvig Åberg at the top there at 9-1. Cameron Young, still, of course, looking for his first PGA Tour win, unbelievably, 12-1. Sahith Theegala, who got his first win over there not long ago, 14-1. And then there's a little bit of a drop. You've got Stephen Jaeger at 25-1. Lucas Glover's around about there as well. A little bit further back to Bo Hostler, Emiliano Grillo. Thomas Dietrich still looking for his first win on any main tour. His only professional victory on the Challenge Tour a few years ago now by a whopping margin, but hasn't followed that up. And he's a guy that we've been saying for a long time, well, surely he must win, surely he must win. Maybe not. Right, down to the picks. Who do you guys fancy? Matt, who's your first selection?
I'm going to kick off with Akshay Bhatia. Now, he became a winner for the first time on the PGA Tour in the summer. But the clincher for me has just been his form on Paspalum and this sort of course by the ocean. Since the start of 2022, he won at Emerald Bay in the Bahamas in January 2022. He missed the cut the following week at another course in the Bahamas. But I can excuse that because he was fresh off a big breakthrough win. The following year, he finished fourth and seventh in those two events. He then finished second at the Puerto Rico Open, which again, I think could be another good pointer for this week. Blustery, by the sea, that sort of unusual grass on the greens. And then he was also 24th at Corrales Punta Cana, and that included a 63 in round two. So although he was outside the top 10 that week, there was some good golf from him. He was 21st last time out in Japan, up against a field that's a lot better than this week. I think, initially you could get 40-1 on him. I think he's 35s now. But I like that. I think the conditions are quite nice for him.
Don't forget his fourth place in Mexico earlier on in the year as well.
Yes, yeah.
Again, good. On Paspalum greens. Yeah. In fact, when I looked at it, you know, just the strokes gained stats for all year, you know, pound for pound, his fourth place in Mexico, you know, looking at the field strength, was better than his win at the Barracuda, yeah, as was his runner-up in Puerto Rico as well, again, yeah, on Paspalum. So, yeah, I'm quite fond of Akshay this week myself as well. And my top selection is going to go the way of Taylor Montgomery. Obviously had an unbelievable start to the season, but it just hasn't. It hasn't quite materialised since then. He was back end of last year, he was 15th in the RSM and then started really well in Hawaii, 12th there and then 5th in the Californian desert, but just hasn't quite hit those heights since. And his long game kind of fell off a cliff in the middle of the year, and there's been plenty of missed cuts, but there's small signs lately that he's maybe turning things around. That was towards the end of the season there, he was 37th at St Jude, but then he's kicked off for made cuts here recently, 35th at the Shriners and 16th at the Zozo last time out. Now, we don't have the strokes gains stats from Japan, but we do have accuracy off the tee, and he was 55th of 77 that week. So you can only assume that his iron's improved from recent weeks there to finish inside the top 20. But yeah, I'm just conscious of this, you know, being such a wide open, all the wide open fairways from the tee, that it turns into somewhat of a putting competition. And if it does, then I think Montgomery's obviously one of the better equipped in the field. The greens are quite undulating as well. There's a lot of slope on them. I think it'll suit him in terms of that, because I think the greens could turn out to be almost the only test here. It remains to be seen. Obviously, we haven't seen much of the course, but I'm quite hopeful here that after a top 20 in Japan, that if he can kick on, this could be the perfect course for Montgomery to get his maiden victory.
And I'll push on with my second, and I'm going with a highly unusual Svensson double, because I quite like Adam Svensson after my Jesper Svensson on the other side of the Atlantic. What are the chances that you have a Svensson double and they're different nationalities? Yeah, because Adam is Canadian. But what I like about him is he's won at the Abaco Club in the Bahamas, again on Paspalum grass. He's finished sixth at Corrales Punta Cana. Again, that's another good tick for putting on those greens. But I've just... Niall was like saying how he was a bit frustrated about not being on Sami Valimaki. I've noted that he's good in certain conditions. At the start of last year, I kind of noticed that Adam Svensson was very good when he was at blustery spots. He'd won at the Landings Club on the Corn Free Tour, which is a very blustery seaside course that was very reminiscent of places that he'd done well, like Wailea and PGA National, and very reminiscent of Sea Island. And I had backed Adam at all those sort of places, and I stopped backing him when he was at Sea Island and he won the RSM Classic there. So I don't want to repeat that error. I might be late to catch him, but I think he likes playing in blustery spots by the sea, and he can put on this sort of these sort of greens. He's also played four rounds of golf in his last nine starts, so he's in very steady form. And again, 35-1, I think he's amongst that. Put it this way, I mean, this is no disrespect to Stephen Yeager, but I prefer to have Bartier and Svensson at 35-1 than him at 25. So yeah, he's my second pick this week.
Yeah, I agree with that, Darren. I think if this plays out the way that I'm thinking, that you know you're going to bomb and putt your way to victory here, I find it very hard to leave out Lucas Herbert. He's one who's actually sits 146th in the FedEx rankings. So as we mentioned there last week in Qatar, the likes of Jameson, Scott Jameson, what he did. Lucas Herbert's going to need something similar over the next couple of weeks, a really good effort. And this represents a huge chance, I think. He obviously got three DP World Tour wins and one PGA Tour win, you know, over the last couple of years. It's quite prolific. And I do think he's somewhat of a dog. I've got, you know, kind of high hopes of him of you know, knocking off wins every season here. And obviously his win in Bermuda by the coast is relevant. And it was actually 2 years ago this week. 2 years ago this very day, he won on Halloween night, Sunday night on the 31st of October. Exactly 2 years ago, so could find form this time of year. I think his win in the Dubai Desert as well is significant as well with the conditions that we're going to see this week. Recently, he's been 30th in the Fortinet and 28th at the Shriners, which has been fair enough. He was also third earlier on in the year in Saudi Arabia on Paspalum greens as well. So yeah, I've been on Herbert for two of his four victories, one in Bermuda. And in earlier on in the year, where was that, in Japan? Was it?
Yes, Japan. Yeah,
it was on him there. And so backed him twice in two of his four victories. So I'm hoping I can land another one. And as I say, you know, just what these guys are capable of, maybe whenever they need to, when their backs are against the wall. He's obviously got he's got a fallback of a DP World Tour card, I'm sure. You know, but 146th in the rankings, he needs a big week and conditions will certainly suit, I think.
Yeah, he's definitely a better player than that ranking suggests. And as you say, a course that could fit him quite nicely. The area down there, I actually spent a week in Cabo San Lucas with Johnny Morgan in January 2020. And that was as much fun as you can imagine, playing a little bit of golf, helping out John give a few lessons to some locals there. There is a lot of really good golf in the area down there. I know a lot of Americans go down as well. But keep an eye on the scenery as well. Absolutely spectacular. We went on a boat ride, a whaling boat ride, and we saw so many whales. I can't even begin to imagine. And a couple of them were cruising along with the boat for us for 10 or 15 minutes. And even the guides were getting their phones out and videoing it, because stuff like that just never happened. So as much as on the golf course, there's going to be plenty of action, have one eye on the sea as well, because there might be a few whales nipping about, some dolphins. It is a spectacular area. Any other players that came to your attention and were just nibbling around the edges of your tips this week?
Well, I'll jump in first. I am going to add a little wind saver on Ludwig Ober. I think the quality of his driving means that I think if he gets those angles right, he could be hitting a lot of short irons into holes, and bringing par fives into play in two. I think this could be. I have a sort of feeling that it could be a sort of Victor Hovland. You know, Victor Hovland did well in Puerto Rico and this event when it was at El Camaleón. I kind of got that vibe. It's a big opportunity for him. I think Niall made a really good point. I like him. I loved Mike Ober at El Camaleón. I thought it was brilliant, a brilliant course to be a punter on. But it did sort of occur to me when Hovland did well there that perhaps one of the reasons why you could go for those little canny types was that actually quite a lot of the time the big stars didn't actually turn up to play them. So it actually, the big hitters were the ones that aren't actually very good at big hitting, well, unless they're on their A game. So that's why it drew the likes of Brian Gay and Graham McDowell into play. So I just think, and the other thing is, when I started to look at the field, Ober is, as soon as you saw Jaeger at 25-1, I suddenly thought, well, Ober's in a bit of a different class to this. I think he's got a really good chance of getting his first PGA Tour win this week.
Yeah, I was quite keen on him too, but I was hoping for around a 12-1 mark or something. That's what I was really hoping for at the start of the week, and then I might have got interested. But as you say, like, as a win saver, I think it's quite sensible. Over his last 24 rounds of golf, he's only been outside the top 15 at the end of those rounds six times out of his last 24 rounds of tournament golf, which is an incredible run of form. Three of those actually were last time out at the Shriners as well, where he was outside the top 15 the first three rounds and then fired a final round 62 to finish 13th. So yeah, it's a phenomenal run of form. And I'm just slightly worried about it turning into a bit of a putting contest, even though he's a fine putter at the end of the day so far on tour. But I think the playing field might be somewhat leveled. That's my only worry about getting involved with single figures. But I've got two others I just want to mention slightly. One being Cameron Champ. You know, when we come to a golf course where we're thinking Bombers might dominate, Cameron Champ, you know, often comes into conversation. But his form recently has been quite good. 9th at the Sanderson Farms, then 18th at the Shriners. Last time out at Sozo, it wasn't so good, but I don't think that claustrophobic nature, the Narashino golf course, would really suit him. But he's got two top 15 finishes out of three efforts at Kapalua. I think a lot will depend on how he puts this week, but he's been putting well lately, and he can bully this track as well, I think. So if he puts well, I think, you know, he could have a huge chance of landing another victory. And then, so he was available around 70-1, but I think it's around 50-1 now. And I would have a small each way bet on. And then finally, a small each way bet on Patton Kizzard at 150-1. Obviously, he's one who has won in Mexico here before. He won the 2017 edition of this event in Maricopa. He sits 130th in the FedEx rankings. So he needs to raise five spots in order to get his card. It's 46. He hasn't been in good form, obviously, as you can tell by sitting 130th in the rankings, but his 46th place at the Shriners last time out was his best effort from a strokes gain perspective since early June. So I'm hopeful he can maybe kick on from that. He's got another top 10 at Maricopa as well, and he was runner-up in Mexico on the Corn Ferry Tour a number of years ago as well. He's got a top 10 at Kapalua too. So, yeah, I'm thinking just 150-1 to recapture some of that Mexico form that he's shown here before, and obviously when his back's against the wall to come up with the goods.
Must like his tequila. Now, Mo was saying 12-1 was the sort of number he wanted Ludwig Ober to be to have a little dabble. That's exactly what Cameron Young is, of course, incredibly talented, but another one still looking for his first PGA Tour win. And it feels like this could be the type of week where he actually gets it. As you say, a lot of the big boys not here.
Well, I think the big question, and it's one that hopefully we'll have some sort of idea at the end of the week, is when we've got a new course, there are elements of it that we're looking at. And I'm looking there and thinking, I think there's potential that somebody who hits the ball long and well could get a big advantage. But I also agree with Niall, and there is potential that if it's so open, actually, lots of people are going to hit lots of greens, and it is going to become a putting contest. Now, if it genuinely is that you get an advantage from good driving, he's pretty damn good as well. You know, the only person in this field who he would finish second to in that sort of guide would be the favourite, the Swede Åberg. But if it's a putting contest, perhaps it's going to be a problem for him. So yeah, I did contemplate that, but ultimately I went with the Swede.
He also hasn't played in 8 weeks too, so you know, taking 12-1 about someone who's coming off after 2 months off, you know, risky to say the least.
Yeah, that is a great point. Well, fantastic stuff, guys. Thank you for your time, Matt and Niall. Hopefully, I did a good job stepping in for Ollie. And obviously, if we do get any winners, I'll be claiming that myself as well as you boys. And he's lost a job, basically, so he won't be allowed back on. To recap today's picks and the Challenge Tour Grand Final, Matt went 1 point each way on Jesper Svensson at 20-1. And 1 point each way on Will Enifer at 33-1. And Niall's picks, Ricardo Gouveia 25-1, 1 point each way. And Tom Lewis 28-1, also 1 point each way. Heading to Mexico on the PGA Tour. And Matt led off with Akshay Bhatia 33-1, 1 point each way. Adam Svensson for that Svensson double there, 35-1, 1 point each way. And he also chucked in Ludvig Åberg at 9-1, the favourite. For Niall, it was 1.5 points each way on Taylor Montgomery at 50-1. Lucas Herbert, 45-1, 1 point each way. And he also chucked in Cameron Champ at 50-1 and Patton Kizzire at 150-1. Matt, before we go, you're on Twitter at Matt Cooper Golf. Thank you. Anything you want to say as a closing remark?
No, just I'm looking forward to seeing what a Tiger Woods test is like.
Great stuff. Niall is on Twitter at BetGolfWorld. Any closing remarks, Niall?
No, I'll talk about the other event. Obviously, just looking forward. It's good to have this on telly as well. So, yeah, there'll be plenty of interest talking points over the week.
So my name is Kit Alexander. You can find me on Twitter at KitOnTheCourse. As I say, I'm heading over to Mallorca this afternoon. I'll be covering the Rolex Challenge Tour Grand Final, supported by the R&A. So you'll be able to watch that live, of course, and the event in Mexico over on the PGA Tour as well. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy the golf. Good luck with your picks, and see you next time on The Tips.